Good afternoon, everyone. This is Mike Schrader, President of Private Wealth Management at Baird, and I want to personally welcome you to our conference call this afternoon, which is exclusive for our Baird clients. And we're going to talk a little bit and spend some time and address the recent market volatility, the implications that we see from our perspective for the markets, and the investment strategy that we all employ. Before we begin, I want to personally thank each and every one of you for the trusted relationship you place in us here at Baird across the U.S. And given what we've recently seen in the markets, it is certainly with the activity that we've witnessed, we recognize it can be very unsettling. And I think today is a good opportunity for us to have our chief economist, Bruce Biddles, and our chief investment strategist, Willie Delwich, who are joining us on the call here with their perspectives on what's driving the recent market volatility and what it means for you. We will begin the call today first by some opening comments from Bruce, and then as we sent out the invitation over the last couple of days, we've tried to aggregate many of the questions that have come in to our offices around the country, and we'll try and respond to a number of those questions today given the time limitations on the call. So once again, on behalf of all of us at Baird, I want to personally thank you for the relationship and the trust that you place in us, and certainly for joining us on the call today. I'd like to turn it over now to Bruce Biddles. Bruce?
All right. Well, thank you, Mike, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to this special client call. Certainly, the start of the year has been less than what we would have liked, but with so many things, we have to deal with what is actually happening as opposed to what we think should be happening. Our discussion today will include what are the core problems creating the volatility in the market. We want to look at certainly the international developments that are causing a lot of anguish among investors. There's a lot of concern about the U.S. economy, and we'll discuss that as well. And certainly we can't end discussion without going into what is happening in the oil pits and commodity pits that has caused a lot of concern about the global economy and that how it might overflow into our own economy. Before we get started, I want to just touch briefly on what took place last year, because a lot of that has overflowed into 2016. When we entered 2015, our concerns were with excessive valuations in the market. Stocks were, in our opinion, were pretty richly valued, and that always causes some concern. Now, let me say this first. Valuations do not give any indication of the direction of the stock market. That's not their purpose. But valuations do tell you something about the risk in the market, and I think that's where our discussion will surround today. We were also concerned about earnings revenues last year, the impact of a strong dollar had on that, and the reduced economic activity overseas and how that affected the bottom line of many of our global corporations. We were also worried about falling commodity prices last year, and that was early in the year, and the implications that might have on the health of the global economy. Commodity prices are often a reliable leading indicator for the global economy and the reason why we had focused on that. So getting into 2016 and moving forward, we see some of the same concerns now. Valuations remain elevated. When we look at price earnings ratios, price to cash ratios, price to cash flow, I mean, price to dividends, and also the stock market valuations relative to the size of our economy, all show elevation slightly above what we'd like to see. Now, this was not improved last year, even though we had a 12% correction in the market, and the reason was earnings actually fell in 2015. The dollar remains strong, and the global economic recovery weak, and this will continue to impact global corporations in 2016. But earnings comparisons this year will be quite a bit easier than they have been in the past. And if the dollar would just stabilize after a big gain last year, I believe that corporate earnings could improve 10% at least over this year over last year. That would go a long way in improving a lot of these valuations. The drop in oil prices that began last summer accelerated this year, as you know. This has caused most of the recent turmoil, not only in the U.S., but in global markets as well. The worry among investors is that the drop in oil revenue and earning power of oil companies will lead to a high rate of loan defaults, and we'll discuss this further in a few minutes. Stock market volatility. Entering the year, we felt that volatility will increase this year over what we had seen in recent years. Actually, we become quite spoiled. There was virtually no volatility in the markets in 2012, 13, and 14. I think the worst correction we saw was about 5 or 6%. Then we had a 12% correction in 2015, and there was a lot of concern about that volatility jump. But actually, if you look at the past history of our markets going back 100 years, a 15% move from top to bottom in any given year would be normal. So we were not so concerned about volatility last year. We did feel that volatility would increase this year because of two developments. One, the Federal Reserve Board was beginning to raise interest rates, and historically the markets become somewhat more volatile in that environment. Also, this is a presidential election year with lots of noise. And by the way, we suggest strongly that you try to keep the noise at a minimum in terms of your investment decisions. Typically, what you see on the business news at night has already been discounted by the market to a large degree, and therefore not really helpful to any long-term investment decisions that may be in front of you. It should be pointed out also that high volatility is not necessarily a negative for the markets. Very often, high levels of volatility are seen at important lows in the market. Certainly, volatility can get stronger, so we have to give this some more time to see if volatility reaches a new high. But the point is that volatility is not necessarily a good reason to sell stocks. The Fed's impact on the market this year, we believe, is overstated. But the Fed obviously is less friendly now toward the markets than they were in 2012, 2013, and 14. The U.S. economy remains in a slow growth mode, which is keeping a lid on corporate earnings. But really, outside the energy sector, corporate earnings remain very vibrant. So that doesn't concern us as much at this point in time. The slow growth economy. Typically, the stock market does best in a slow growth environment because it does not produce any inflation and it keeps interest rates low and stable. The negative about a slow growth economy is that it is more vulnerable to an outside shock. And so that's the concern now. But I do believe the U.S. economy, and we'll discuss this as we go along, is not susceptible to a recession in 2016. International developments, the market decline this year got underway as a result of the troubles that developed in China in early January. The concern is that China's problems will be imported to the rest of the world, including the U.S. Some of the volatility and investor nervousness is justified because of that, but the harsh reaction to the news out of China has a lot more to do, in my opinion, to elevated valuations. When valuations are stretched, the market is much more vulnerable to an outside shock. And this, I believe, is what occurred in the first week in January and as it carried forward in recent weeks. Although we have been cautious on China for some time, we felt late last year that China's influence on the U.S. and the global economy was somewhat overstated. U.S. exports to China are less than 1% of GDP. The slowdown in China is not necessarily a large negative for the global economy, given that China's economic base now is much larger than it was just 5 or 7 years ago when they were growing at double digits. Now that China is growing at 5% or so, it's doing that from a much larger base. So its influence on the rest of the world is not likely as dramatic as the turbulence in the market might suggest. Now, this is not to say that China is trouble-free. This is not an attempt to make light on China's problems. We are often leery about the economic data that comes out of China. China's debt issue is real. Their debt to GDP soared to 260% from 160% just 8 years ago. And of course, they suffer from overcapacity in nearly every industry. So there's a lot of work to do there. At this juncture, a large part of that is likely built into current prices, in our opinion. When we look at the U.S. economy and its impact on the financial markets, certainly growth remains elusive. This is the weakest economic recovery out of recession in the history of the country, and it remains to be the case. We believe that GDP growth last year was about 2%. And it's been 2% for the past 6 years. Once again, the stock market has done very well in previous years because the slow growth economy did not produce any inflation and interest rates remained low. But at some point, the U.S. economy needs to improve some if we're going to get a recovery and a revival in corporate earnings. And we need faster growth in earnings to spark a revival in the stock market. The U.S. economy slowed last year late in the fourth quarter, and that is a concern of ours right now. It'll be interesting and important to see what happens in the first quarter. If you remember, in two previous years, 14 and 15, the stock market was down. The U.S. economy suffered. A lot of it was blamed on the weather. So those comparisons will be a lot easier going forward, and it wouldn't surprise me if the first quarter of this year did indeed surprise on the upside. The industrial side of our economy has slowed significantly, and there's no doubt the manufacturing sector is suffering. And the recent numbers suggest the industrial sector is really on the cusp of recession. But the service sector remains vibrant, and it represents 80% of all economic activity. The labor markets continue to show strength, and wage pressures are beginning to build. Now, that's very important simply because without income gains, growing the economy is very difficult. So if we are going to see some wage gains, that leads us to believe that economic growth later this year and in 2017 could be stronger. There's lots of controversy surrounding the validity of the employment numbers, with the unemployment rate and the participation rate conflicting. But what cannot be ignored is the fact that job openings in the U.S. are near an all-time record high, and claims for unemployment insurance are at 40-year lows. Missing in this cycle has been the pervasive weakness in capital investment. That's been hurting our economy. Companies have chosen to buy back their own stock as opposed to invest in capital equipment. And I believe significant changes in fiscal policy is required to spark a return in business investment. And this is absolutely necessary if the economy is eventually going to reach some measure of escape velocity. By changes in fiscal policy, I mean that we need to see changes in our tax code, changes in regulations, and also a hard look at our education system. The U.S. economy, in my opinion, is poised for lots of growth for the rest of the decade, but it will strongly depend on certain reforms in the tax code as a strong first step. Now, oil and commodity price declines. The plunge in oil prices has had a negative impact on the financial markets, no doubt. There has never been, however, a recession in the U.S. associated with declining energy prices. So this is all new territory, and that just adds up to uncertainty, and what the market hates most, is, of course, uncertainty. It was universally felt that oil prices were self-correcting. That is, as prices drop, supply would come off stream. But the reverse has actually happened, with oil production remaining at high levels outside the U.S. despite the plunge in energy prices. The precipitous fall in oil from $70 a barrel to $26 has created instability in the world markets, which it has overflowed into our markets. The worry among investors is that the drop in oil revenue and earning power of oil companies will lead to a high rate of loan defaults. Now, I suspect that there will be some defaults from weak oil producers. How much there will be and how widespread that'll be remains in question. After oil prices have declined 75% from the top, we doubt, however, that this is the moment to get bearish on the energy sector. Too much damage has occurred to this sector to expect a quick reversal. We anticipate a slow recovery in energy prices, and energy stocks could improve over the course of the intermediate term. Now, the blame for the plunge in oil prices has been placed on falling demand. Some are worried that this means the economy is slowing. But we think that the drop in oil prices is more likely due to increased supply. Oil prices averaged $100 a barrel from 2008 to 2014. This fueled a supply boom championed by U.S. technology expertise. It is likely that the rise of the U.S. as a big-time player in the oil production is primarily responsible for the sharp decline in oil prices. If that's the case, we believe over time, supply and demand will eventually come back into balance. Oil company earnings are down 76%. This has taken a large chunk of the S&P 500 earnings. A slow recovery there will certainly improve the valuation situation going forward. It was commonly believed that low energy prices would spark a revival in consumer spending. This has not happened yet. Now, Federal Reserve certainly has played a role in the volatility this year. Some of our observers liken the market this year to 2011. If you remember, 2011 experienced a 20% correction. The important point about that correction, however, is that it did not trigger a recession in 2011. Much of the concern and even the panic is worried that the U.S. will slip into recession this year, and we see little evidence of that. Some are using the stock market as an economic barometer, suggesting the economy is vulnerable to a drop in, similar to what 2011 was, but even in 1987, that crash did not produce a recession in the economy. So this is important for a number of reasons. Historically, stock market corrections tend to be more shallow and end more quickly when the economy is not in recession. A shift in Fed policy is real, but the Fed cannot be considered hostile to the markets at this time. The fact that the Fed felt compelled to raise rates suggests to us they feel the economy is strong enough to support such an increase. Historically, slow, very measured increases in interest rates has not negatively impacted stocks or the economy. Now, if the Fed were forced to raise rates rapidly, that would be a totally different story. But that's not the case in the present example. If we felt that inflation was about to climb, we would be concerned. But inflation is a global phenomenon, and there is no evidence that inflation is about to pick up anytime soon in the world economies. However, when the Fed allowed QE3 to expire in 2014, and by raising rates last year, the Fed, or the Yellen put as many describe it, really went away. And I think that has led to the increase in volatility. This has affected how investors perceive the risks in the market. The Yellen put is no longer available. And I think this has caused the markets some stress going forward. But this is only part of the reason behind the volatility. Also important is the fact that the Fed, by keeping rates near zero, this has been instrumental in corporations buying back their own stock the past several years. Corporations have boosted buybacks by 194% since 2009. While increasing capital investment by only 43%. And this is one reason why the economy has not shown a whole lot of growth in recent years. But this also represents a lot of pent-up demand for capital investment in the future. We think that's bullish. Corporations have $1.9 trillion on their balance sheets. so corporations still have the potential to buy more stock back or to spend on capital improvements. So with that said, I'm going to turn this over now to Willie Delwich, who's going to talk about the technical prospects of a market low and what to look for. Willie?
Thanks, Bruce. Before I talk about what it is that we would be looking for to give us some conviction that we're at a good low, I'll start with one overall point, and that to say that bottoming is a process. It's not an event. It's a process, and we cannot know with high conviction that an important turn has been made until after the fact. It is imprudent to try to call a bottom. If you watch CNBC, you will see it all the time. That is not an attempt that we try to do. We would advise against it. It's better to follow the evidence and wait for confirmation that an important low is in place. And so then what would we be looking at? One bigger picture thing to look at is that we would expect to see improvement in the imbalances that led to stock market weakness. Bruce talked about it. The valuation excesses that we've seen, we would expect to see some relief from excessive valuations before we would start to think about a bottom and a being in place. And then there's three technical signals that we would look for: breadth, sentiment, and momentum. All of these tend to lead price, and that's an important thing. You'd like to see these move up and then have conviction that price is going to start moving up. I take them one at a time. Breadth. We need to see less downside participation by the average stock, and that would help set up positive breadth divergences, and those are typically seen late in the bottoming process. Right now, we have little evidence of this. We have new lows continuing to expand to the downside, and we have the percentage of industry groups in uptrends continuing to contract. So we need to see fewer stocks making new lows and more groups starting to turn ahead of the popular averages. Sentiment. Important lows tend to occur with widespread anxiety and investor pessimism. We are seeing this right now, and that may be enough to produce a countertrend rally. But if we don't see breadth turn higher and see improved momentum, that may not be enough to argue that an important turn has been made. And then finally, momentum. As bottoming processes tend to conclude, demand for stocks surge. We typically see evidence of this by looking at the volume data. And we see trading sessions where upside volume outpaces downside volume by better than 9-1. So 90% of the volume on a given day would be to the upside. Since mid-December, however, we have had four instances of the opposite, downside volume outpacing upside volume by better than 9-1. So in the current case, we would look to see a break in downside momentum and then the creation of some upside momentum by looking for at least two sessions in which we see this 9-1 spread to the upside. At present, we see little firm evidence that we have made an important low, but we could very well be at the beginning of that process. Sentiment is certainly pointing to widespread pessimism. Now we would start to look for positive breadth divergences and better momentum as we go forward. Bruce talked about actually a lot of the questions that we've received as we've set up this conference call. He's covered questions about China, about the role of the Fed, but there's still some areas that we've gotten questions on, heard concerns about that he hasn't gone over yet, and so now this will be a chance for us to talk about some of those. So Bruce, let's start with one that could get a little bit technical, but I really think it needs to be addressed anyway. It's something that I've heard questions in the past about. I'm sure you've heard questions about it. At Baird, we've been making the argument that stocks are overvalued, while we've heard from other folks suggesting that stocks are either fairly valued or even undervalued in the current environment. What would you say explains the different perspectives on what seems like it should be a fairly straightforward topic?
Well, you're right. There's been some diversity of opinion about valuations, but we use very vanilla observations. We use gap earnings, price ratios. We use the median S&P 500, and it's trading about 22 times right now, and the norm is about 17 times. We also like to look at something that has to do with assets, and that is the the total value of stocks on all the exchanges versus the size of the economy. And if you look at that, there's only been two other periods where they've been stretched like they are now, and that was 2007 and 2000. So that is somewhat troublesome. Also, if you looked at price to cash flow ratios, they're too elevated. So this has been the case now for several years. And once again, I said earlier that valuations are not a great tool to determine where the next stock market move is going to be. But they do tell you something about the risk in the market, and I think that's really important.
Okay, thanks. So as we're talking about some of these events that we've talked about in the beginning of 2016 and really what happened towards the end of last year, stepping back for a minute from the week-to-week or even really month-to-month fluctuations that we see in the stock market, what would you say the outlook for the next, say, 5-10 years is? Is what we've been experiencing recently over the past few months, is that beginning of a new long-term trend, or is there kind of something else in the works, do you think?
Well, obviously, anyone trying to predict 5 or 10 years out, that's a real chore and likely to be very inaccurate. Forecasts for earnings by Wall Street the past few years have been totally off the mark. For instance, the forecast for earnings for 2014 were for them to climb 25%, and they climbed 5%. And last year, the forecast was for a 21% gain, and they were actually down 3 or 4%. So forecasts are not very valuable, and we like to go by the weight of the evidence to determine how we feel about the markets going forward. But I would say this. I think the potential for the U.S. is extraordinary. I think it's been held back in the last several years due to poor fiscal policy. If we can get a very friendly policy toward business, particularly medium-sized businesses, I think that would go a long way in allowing us to move into escape velocity in terms of the economy. And by that I mean something above 3%. We haven't had a growth above 3% now for about 10 years. And that's very unusual. So I suspect that the markets typically follow earnings long term, and if the economy can get back in gear and our growth rate increase significantly, I think it'd be a new era for investors. I also believe that we are probably in a secular bull market that began at that bottom in March of 2009. Secular bull markets typically last about 18 years. Now, they also include a lot of cyclical volatility and a lot of corrections. But the primary trend remains up, and I think that's the market environment we're in right now.
Okay, and you mentioned fiscal policy there, and another question that we've gotten a lot of is, it's an election year. You talked about it being noisy. Are there other things you think at work in terms of politics right now that are impacting the markets, impacting the economy, because we do have this presidential election cycle upon us?
Well, this certainly appears to perhaps be a different election period than we're used to, and that might develop into a lot more noise than normal. But I would say this. The markets in an election year historically, and this goes back to 1946, are typically up about 5 or 6% during an election year. Most of the weakness comes in the first half of the year, and then in the second half, the markets tend to recover, with the best gains coming after the election, regardless of the outcome. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case again in 2016.
Okay. So anytime we start to have a correction like we're experiencing right now, investor memories start to go back to previous instances, say 2008 or even 2000. How would you compare what we're experiencing right now to either of those experiences? Are we looking at a replay of those processes, or is there something else that's going on right here?
Well, it's difficult to say we're in a replay of 2008. 2008, the economy was already falling into recession, and the banking system was very fragile in 8 and 9 and 10 even. And so I don't think the situation is comparable. I do think investors have to pay very close attention in these kinds of markets, well, actually in all kinds of markets, but particularly now in asset allocation. It becomes becomes more relevant in the current environment when volatility is rising and valuations are stretched and the world geopolitical environment is less than stable. I think the correct asset allocation in this environment is for the average investor would be 55% exposure to stocks, 30% exposure to high grade corporate bonds with a time frame of 5 to 7 years, and the balance in cash. Now, the media has made light of cash in recent years. They've called it trash and because it doesn't earn anything, and in certain ways that's correct. But cash should be thought of as an important asset class for managing risk, and the liquidity it provides when the time comes to be more aggressive in the stock market. So if you're asking me how do you approach the current environment, I would say the best tool in the toolkit is asset allocation. And for most investors, 55% stocks, 30% bonds, and 15% cash would be the right exposure. Now, if we felt that our indicators suggested that this was going to turn into something worse, we would suggest reducing equity exposure by maybe 5 or 10% even. But at this juncture, we don't have enough evidence to make that suggestion.
Okay, I think that about wraps up the time we wanted to spend today. Lots of noise, lots of distractions out there running really at record levels. So, I'd say thank you, Bruce, to helping to cut through a lot of that noise and helping clarify things in investors' minds. Any final words before we sign off?
Yes, Willie, just again, thanks to you and Bruce for joining us this afternoon. It's always great to get your observations on, especially what's been going on in the markets of late. Always some great insight. And most importantly, thanks to our audience out there today across the U.S. Thank you for joining us, and again, that trusted relationship that you place here at Baird. This concludes our call this afternoon. I want to encourage everybody out there in the audience to certainly feel free to reach out to your advisory team here at Baird. And certainly, Bruce, Willie, any of us would be more than happy to address any personal or additional questions and your own individual situations. So thanks again this afternoon. I hope everybody has a wonderful rest of the week. And we will sign off now and hopefully be in touch with everyone again real soon. Thanks again.